old pal, the Crypt Keeper, having a little holiday fun. Why else would I be in this getup? Unless there was a clause in my contract. In fact, I've got some Christmas goose for you. Goosebumps, that is. Yes, indeedy. A little terror tale chock full of holiday fear. I mean, cheer, of course. So, get a gander of a Yuletide Yelp yarn that goes a little something like this. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house.
Howdy and hello, welcome to the Tales from the Scary Thing. Look back at the horror series Tales from the Crypt. I'm Stu.
I'm Scott.
And this week we are making a list of all the reasons we love to hate Tales from the Crypt, Season 1, Episode 2, and All Through the House.
Aw, I don't think I quite hated this.
I was trying to come up with some kind of Santa pun, but making a list, checking it twice, just felt a little too on the nose.
A list of all the reasons making... I mean, I checked this episode twice because I watched it twice, and I watched a different version of it, so... That was
you went back and watched the 1970s TV movie version, right?
I don't know if it's a TV movie. It's like a British version of Tales from the Crypt, but it's played a lot straighter. It's scarier, though, because the Santa in that, he's just a guy with a beard, and he just shows up, like, ringing a bell at the beginning. He doesn't look like a monster man like Larry Drake does in this.
Yeah.
Like, Larry Drake looks like something from Jim Henson Productions in this. He's just, he's got Bubba teeth and scars on his face.
He's got some real Bubba teeth, man. That's his dental hygiene was lacking.
Yeah, he looks like a guy no one would ever let near them. And rightfully so, because it turns out he's an insane killer.
Yeah, kind of cool, kind of not, his whole motivation is just, I'm an insane person, I got out, and I'm going to kill you now, like.
Yeah, because he's not, like, the initial driving factor, he's kind of the plot twist in this episode.
Yeah, he becomes an alibi more than anything.
Yeah, and then, anyway, you know, you have to watch those alibis because they'll catch up on you. That's the moral of tonight's terror tale.
Kiddies. So this is a pretty neat episode. Came out June 10th, 1989.
Perfect for Christmas.
Yeah, right? Directed by Robert Zemeckis, which was a surprise to me, I guess. I don't know. I guess I didn't realize how big HBO was at the time and how much money they were able to throw at some of these projects. Not to say that they can't now, but you know, you're pulling Robert Zemeckis and you're getting big name for these shows, and that's I don't know why, it just surprised me.
Yeah, and it is like early prestige television, and it's a guy, you know, you can do a fuck off 20-minute episode of Tales from the Crypt and kind of do whatever you want to do and have some fun. It's not like actually directing something like Back to the Future or Forrest Gump.
Yeah. Now I have to wonder about this, because we're going to get to it with the cast. This came out in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
This must have been right... I don't know if he was... He might have still been working on Back to the Future, or this was right after that finished when he did this.
Well, Back to the Future was 85. Like, that was the year... Or 86.
Right, no, but I mean Back to the Future, like, part... Part 2 and 3.
Oh, yeah, 2 and 3. Yeah, because 2 and 3 would have been right around the same time. Let me look up when...
I want to say 3 came out in 90?
Okay, so November of 89 and then May of 90.
Yeah, I think he was either taking a quick break from those or he had just finished Principles on that, because one of the cast members comes back. And then also the music, I normally don't do music by, but the music in this episode was done by Alan Silvestri, who works with Zemeckis a lot. So it's weird that those two would pop up. It was written by Fred Decker. He's famous for writing Monster Squad, Night of the Creeps, less famous for RoboCop 3, and he also did some work on The Predator.
The
newest one.
Not nice, because The Predator 2018 fucking sucks. I watched that on the I watched that on the flight home from Alabama for Christmas, and yeah, it was just terrible. I was watching an edited version too, because Predators are, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because, yeah, it was definitely edited. There was a scene. You can always tell if somebody flips someone off and it gets blurred out. Like, that's 100% an edited movie.
Mm-hmm. Almost the definition of it. Yeah, no, I was not too crazy. But I saw it in theaters. I was really excited going. I was like, Shane Black's back. And then,
yeah, because he wrote and directed it. And everybody was pretty optimistic. But then there's, there are no good kills. And then in the last, 20 minutes of the movie, they realize, oh, we have all these characters and we have to start killing them, and most of the kills are just really shitty.
It was just so much of it was just unnecessary and not entertaining.
Yeah. It's just like this guy, one guy gets his legs cut off by a force field on the Predator's ship, and he just falls off the ship.
Mm.
Yeah.
Tom
Jane and Keegan-Michael Key shoot each other.
Yeah.
Okay, hey fellas, you got any more bullets to go around? Because I didn't enjoy the film.
Ugh. It's just, I don't know, man. I shouldn't have wasted my money on it.
Yeah, I mean, seeing it for free is the way to go. Anyway, this is an interesting non sequitur. So let's fucking focus on the shit.
Short cast in this. Like, I didn't even list the husband. There were four. You see four characters on screen, and you get two voices.
The husband's Marshall Bell. He's a pretty big actor, but he has like two lines in this.
Yeah, it's like I the only thing, because I looked at his stuff real quick, the only thing I knew him from was as the general who gets the Sky Marshal who gets relieved of duty in Starship Troopers.
Yeah, he's one of the dads in Total Recall. He's one of the dads in Stand By Me. He's in Total Recall. I forget what he does in that off the top of my head. In A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, he's like the super abusive coach who gets whipped by Freddy.
Yeah, he's the homoerotic gym coach.
Yeah.
And when I didn't recognize that was him.
And when you see him in this, he's reading A Christmas Carol, and he's just like, God bless us, everyone.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a weird, it's like clear that he was reading it to himself.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's just a weird thing to sit and read. I mean, I understand it gets Christmas, but just like as a, like, I'm going to sit down in front of a nice warm fire and read A Christmas Carol to myself tonight. This is a nice Christmas Eve tradition for me.
Yeah, he just wants everybody to know, like, how he feels about the holiday. He's done well for himself, but he still wants to shit on the spirit of giving. Like, he's that kind of rich guy.
Yes. And it's not necessarily established, but it's pretty evident that there's some money here.
Yeah, I guess we'll get into it.
Yeah. Mary Ellen Trainer as wife. That is how she's listed in the credits. You never hear her name. She was the mom from Goonies. That's where I know her most from. The scene where they're doing the tour around the house and Corey Feldman's being a little shit to some poor immigrant. She was the psychologist from Lethal Weapon 3 and 4. And then she played a lot of mom characters in some other things that I hadn't seen.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a mom in this, but also a murderer.
Yeah. Larry Drake as Santa. That's what Santa as kind of, I almost think of it like Jack from Fight Club. Jack. Where it's not really, quote unquote Jack from Fight Club, Edward Norton's character.
Yeah.
I am Jack's raging boner for, I don't know, fucking male on male violence.
For missing the point of the book, I guess.
This is the masterpiece in filmmaking and storytelling. Yeah, and it was really funny because he plays Santa, Crazy Santa. It was funny because he was super famous for his part in L.A. Law, where he was working as he was playing a developmentally disabled gentleman working as like a mail carrier in this building. And there was a Christmas episode. There's like a very special episode where he played Santa, and he's like, the end of it is like, I just want you all to know how much I love you and how much you're all my family. And then, like, everybody tears up. But watching him in this, that's all I could see in my head.
Yeah.
So it was very confusing for me.
For me, he's always, like, he's not even the main villain in Darkman, but he's, like, the one that gets the most screen time. That's what I think of with this guy. And then Dr. Giggles, which is not good.
Dr. Giggles, yeah. Most famously for me, I know him as the guy who's like, well there, Ching-a-Chang-Chong, why don't you make me move my beer bottles from the Karate Kid?
Yeah, I always forget he's in that, because it almost seems like he's too good to play a character that's that one-note racist.
I think that he just happened to be on the beach they were filming at, and they said, hey, man, you want to be in this?
Yeah, you look a guy who'd go out of his way to be really racist.
Yeah, it's, man, what an uncomfortable scene that is.
Yeah, that's, you know, I've only seen The Karate Kid one fucking time, but I saw it, like, yeah, it was when I was already an adult, though. I watched it the first time when I was like 25.
Crazy.
Yeah, for some reason I never watched it as a kid. Something about it, I guess maybe because a lot of the kids I knew were into it, I was just like, no, fuck that, that's not for me. I'm gonna go watch Spaceballs for the 100th time.
I grew up with a VHS copy of The Princess Bride sitting on my VHS rack. I guess I can't even remember. You know, the little like three-prong racks that you could lean your tapes against. And I didn't watch it until I was almost 12 or 13, because I was like, The Princess Bride, that sounds like a girl's movie. That sounds dumb.
Yeah.
And then I finally watched it. I was like, this is the greatest fucking movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's really good, but the name is very girly. There's girly elements to it, I guess you could say, especially if you're an insecure-ass kid who's like, father is going to shame you for watching a movie where it's like, it's got princess in the title. Enjoy it, you queen.
It's one of those, I was kind of Fred Savage from that movie where I was like, is this a kissing book? Like,
yeah. Yeah, but then you got Andre showing up and you got Inigo Montoya sword. Well, I guess he only sword fights like twice in the movie, but it's still pretty sweet when he does.
Mandy Patinkin did a really good job for that whole thing. But just like, you know, it was one of those things where I just needed Peter Falk to come through and be like, yeah, shut your fucking mouth and watch the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, just like grab you by the hair and shake you. Even though you're sick, like you don't get a pass from this fucking violent Italian grandpa.
My name's Columbo, and he is a clue for you.
And look, he frames you for murder for missing a day of school.
Hope that alibi is rock solid. I was with you, Grandpa. Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Quick rundown of this episode. It's super simple. A woman murders her husband on Christmas Eve and is visited by Santa, who has her on his naughty list.
Yeah, it gets to the point pretty quick. Like, it starts with this slow pan across, you know, the nice Christmas setup, the tree with all the presents, and the house is all decorated. There's a plate of cookies for Santa, and really like soaks up the ambience. It's snowing outside. And
hey, 1980s wasps live here.
Yeah. Well, it's weird their living situation too, because they have a well outside, but like also a pile of wood.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's like a weird, like rich, I live in a historical home somewhere in New Hampshire kind of feel to it.
Yeah. And it opens up with Marshall Bell. He's reading Christmas Carol, and he just is having none of Tiny Tim's fucking bullshit at the end of it.
If I may, it opens up worse than that.
Okay.
It opens up with the Crypt Keeper wearing Santa's face.
Yeah, this is one
of the, like, Garland Green.
Yeah, it's very frightening.
Fucking, like, it was, like, watching it, I was genuinely unsettled. I was like, ugh.
Oh, and Crypt Keeper, I learned, has the eyes of Chucky from Child's Play 1.
Yes.
Yeah, those super baby blues.
Yes. Like, and they kind of blend in with him normally, but, like, wearing the Santa mask, it stands way out.
Yeah, because you know the Crypt Keeper, like, even though he's this husk, he has these nice eyes. So when they're creeping out from this dead Santa face, it really jumps out at you.
Yeah, it was unsettling. But then it goes to the fucking J. Crew ad.
God bless us, everyone. Right. Something needs to be done about that fire. Have you got the poker?
Yes.
Well, let me have it.
What did you say?
What are you, deaf? I said, let me have it.
Merry
Christmas, you son of a bitch.
Yeah, with the setup, you get the directed by Robert Zemeckis. It's a pretty tight cast in this one. There's just there's husband, there's wife, there's Axe Maniac, and there's the kid.
Oh, that's what I was going to mention about the kid. Sorry. The little kid in this was the same girl who did the hoverboard scene in Back to the Future 2.
Oh, yeah, the one who she keeps Griff's board at the end.
Yeah, you can keep it. I have a pit bull now, yeah. Or whatever it's called.
Marty
yeah.
holds onto the Barbie sled that he took.
Yeah.
Which, that's not really how you make a skateboard. You don't just, like, pull the handle off a scooter. There's a little more to it than that.
Hey, man, look, we're just remaking the first movie in the future, all right?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, that's... I guess that's part of the charm, so... What the fuck am I saying?
Where you going, McFly? Hoverboards don't work on water. Unless you got... power.
And he also takes a baseball bat out, so like in the year 2015, I guess it's okay to just beat a guy with a baseball bat in broad daylight.
This one extends
because it's not a dystopian society. It's still like they still have laws and suburbs and everything's kind of functioning like normal. It's just an 80s idea of the future, but you can apparently just beat a guy to death.
I can't help but think, like, that's the future we could have had if Gore had won in 2000. Like, if Florida hadn't fucked up and we had not canceled the recount.
Yeah.
And I feel like Al Gore would have led us to Hill yeah. Valley of 2015.
Nobody listened on global warming, so he's just like, all right, I'm going to put dueling back into effect. So if you and another guy want to just settle it in a public street, it's up to you. We're all going to be dead in 2020 anyway.
5 years. Hope you're using them well.
They could even be in a habitat bubble. Like, that could be Hill Valley, and, like, everything around them is just a wasteland.
Oh, that's just Elon Musk's biodome, I guess.
I don't think he was in biodome.
I'm thinking Elon Musk, like, in 2015 just builds this biodome in, like Epcot Center.
Oh, you're not talking about the film Biodome starring Pauly Shore.
And Stephen Baldwin. I'm absolutely not talking about that.
Okay, yeah, I don't think anybody is. That was another one of those moments where I like was realizing, oh, there can be bad movies, because I was coming off like Son-in-Law and In the Army Now. Like, those were both great, so there's no way Biodome is going to be a misfire. And enough,
he's already hit that bullseye twice. How could he lose that lightning in the bottle?
Yeah, Son-in-Law, I think, is an entertaining movie. In the Army Now, I think I made the smart decision of never watching after I turned 13.
So. In the Army Now isn't bad. It's actually not a terrible representation of some aspects of the military.
Yeah.
Son-in-Law, I had the pleasure of working with Carla Gugino, and mm-hmm. she was just such a nice lady.
Did she talk about Pauly Shore?
I mentioned it to her once when she was at the table, and she thought it was funny that I knew that about her. Because the first time I had met her, I was like, hey, because it was her and Bruce Greenwood sitting at the table, and I was working it, and I was fumbling a little bit. I was like, hey, guys, I'm really sorry. I just have to say, I just got back from overseas, which I had. I appreciate that you guys are here. I watched you, sir, in National Treasure 2 and Star Trek as Captain Admiral Pike. You were great. And Mr. Gugino, I watched you in Iraq when I was watching The Watchmen, and you did such a good job as Silk Spectre and everything else you guys do. Thank you. Let me get that out of the way. Okay, what can I do? Now can I take your order, kind of thing. And they were both really, like, nice, gracious people about it. And then they came back a few nights later, and I was like, hey, by the way, Miss Gugino, our cook wanted me to ask you, you know, how was it on Son-in-Law? And she's like, oh, it was a lot of fun. Pauly Shore is a funny guy, and we had a lot of fun filming it. And I was like, cool. That's good to know.
You should have told her In the Army Now is why you enlisted.
I would never have told her that, because it wasn't. Listen, I already told David Hayter that I joined the Army a little bit for wanting to be too much like Snake. I'm not going to also mention Pauly Shore as one of my reasons for wanting to be in the military.
You could say Andy Dick. He's in that movie too.
I'd rather not do anything.
David Alan Greer.
Andy Dick.
Everybody likes that's David Alan Greer. Lori Petty. She's good.
She is.
Not a great film though. Anyway, I'll tell you what is great is Tales from the Crypt.
Sorry, Tank. Yeah, Tales from the Crypt. Fuck, I can't say the name of the show that we're
Tales
doing.
Tales from the
why.
Crypt. There's a crypt.
Tales.
There's Tales
from
in there.
The Crypt.
Oh yeah, the mom. Have we gotten to the mom killing the dad yet?
No. So okay. You said he doesn't want any of Tiny Tim's shit.
Yeah. He reads out loud, "God bless us, everyone," and is just disgusted.
Like, closes the book like he's fucking found a booger in it or something.
Yeah, almost as if he didn't know that A Christmas Carol is about a miserable guy learning the meaning of Christmas.
He's reading it and he's like, oh yeah, this Ebenezer Scrooge has the right idea the whole time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but he's just going to fuck over everybody harder over the holidays.
This is great. I love this guy. And then, you know, it becomes a fucking liberal. These bleeding hearts.
When he sees the Ghost of Future Past, it's like, okay, Tiny Tim died, so Scrooge was right.
And then he's like, mighty cold in here. Might want to do something about that fire. You got that fireplace poker?
Mm-hmm.
And the whole time he's asking her this, like, the wife has picked it up and is menacingly, like, pacing back and forth with him behind it.
Yeah, this has been building up for a while.
Yeah, like, she's building up that nerve, and then he fucking, honestly, if we were ever hanging out and I said this, I would expect you to kill me at this point, because I've set you up for it.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do anything else, but he's like, well, let me have it.
Yeah, it's a murder pun, so, like, now I have to shoot this guy in the face because he said that.
Yes. And so she does. She's got a good form to it, because it's one good crack and it's done.
Yeah, and just leaves an indentation in his head. It's also a really sloppy murder, and as we find out later, this is premeditated.
Yes. It kind of comes from nowhere. She just fucking kills her husband on Christmas Eve, and then you get, like, a really funny bit. Like, I thought this was pretty entertaining, where she's trying to pull it out and his body just keeps coming with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost like being a puppet going back and forth, and the actor's doing a good job of just, like, slumping and kind of banging himself into this table every time.
He's got a solid dead expression too, like, yes. He's kind of pushing his tongue through his mouth and his eyes are wide, because there's like close-up shots on him while the mom's in the background, because the daughter hears this and comes downstairs, which also, like, shows you how amateur hour this fucking murder is. Because the daughter just comes downstairs because she's waiting for Santa. So, of course, the kid can't sleep. So, This isn't really the night that you commit a murder, unless you're, like, counting on everybody else being tied up with Christmas shit, that they're going to overlook the obvious clues that point to you.
Yeah, they're like, if Crazy Santa hadn't stepped in, this would have been a 3-minute first day on the job, walk in and solve the case, fucking home run for this dude.
Yeah, because she has to move his body later. Yeah, she has to move the body later, and she's not strong enough to really move the body and dispose of it. And then she's disposing of it, like, 10 feet away in a well they have in their yard.
Yeah, it's, just so dumb. Mom, like, ushers the little girl away, like, hey, time to go upstairs, time to go to bed. And, why didn't daddy say night to me? Like, he's asleep, like, you should be, little girl.
Oh, she says Joseph, because...
stepdad.
Stepdad. So, of course, you're not going to give a shit if a stepdad's murdered. I mean, not my stepdad, but stepdads in general. Yeah, you're
shut
fine,
up,
Jerry.
Brad. They go upstairs, and the little girl's like, it's too hot. Like, oh my God. And she's the whole time, like, just a very big, like, this kid's kind of a brat. Like, later on, as Crazy Santa's climbing up her trellis, she's like, where are the toys you're supposed to bring me?
Yeah, and she kind of insults him too, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, I don't know. This girl just screams brat, and she's like, it's too hot to sleep.
Yeah.
So the mom opens the window, but, like, there's snow actively falling outside.
Yeah, there's a goddamn blizzard going.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem right. But I guess at this point, mom's just like, whatever keeps her in this fucking room right now, that's I need.
Yeah, making the room stupidly cold doesn't seem like a great idea to do that, though, because, like, this is enough of a chill that would kill a smaller, weaker child.
Yeah, she's got a bunch of blankets on her. I think she'd be all right. Nice comfy bed.
Yeah, it's just it's one of those things where you think cracking a window in the winter when it's a little hot is going to be the thing to do, and then you wake up the next morning and there's ice in your goddamn bedroom.
Yes, like, oh, what did I do?
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be awesome. It's never fucking awesome. It's terrible.
the idea is like, oh, I'm just going to get a little breeze going in here. It's going to feel so good. And then you wake up and you just you can't get out of bed or else you will freeze to death.
Yeah, a room has had 8 hours or, you know, even like 6 hours to get incredibly cold over the course of a night.
People be dumb, man. She gets the daughter to bed. She runs downstairs. And then it's just her with a telephone in her hand and a will in the other. She gets somebody's voicemail. And then she confesses into a recorded voicemail that can easily be played back, especially when somebody looks at the phone records. And I guess this is where the premeditated bit comes in, where she and some accomplice, probably a boyfriend or something like that, are planning on taking all of this dude's money.
Yeah, and the voicemail says, leave your name, number, and measurement. So it seems like this guy's a player or some kind of audition. Like, the guy is clearly some kind of Lothario.
It has a real, like, not necessarily Patrick Bateman, but what was the, who's the guy that he killed on the newspaper?
Phil or Bill?
Something like that. It just got a real, like, very smarmy 80s executive feel about it.
Yeah, the thing you need to know is she's having an affair with some guy who's pretty sleazy.
Yes.
Which is why she did this murder, but the guy didn't help her. Because if you're in her position, I think the plan is, okay, we'll get this guy out of the way, but you have to help me. Like, you're taking 100% of the blame, and this guy could just write you off as a crazy person. Like, he has plausible deniability. Even if he were a part of this, he's not going to jail, even from this voicemail.
Yeah. It gets weird here, because she's sitting next to her. So... one, head wounds bleed a lot. There's a lot of vessels. There's a lot. The head itself is very vascular. All of the blood in your body goes up and down through your head because your brain needs a lot of it.
And he's just been left there to bleed too.
Yeah, but then like, all she does is she like picks his head up and like rubs a napkin under it and like, oh, okay, well that's clean.
Yeah, and she puts a plastic bag around his head, which is kind of a smart move because if he is still alive, that's gonna suffocate him.
That was the part, like he's pretty obviously dead at this point. I don't know if this was like her trying to contain the mess or whatever, but she like gift wraps the dude's head.
Yeah, I think it's part of that too. Like, definitely just trying to keep everything clean, because I think the smart thing is you go for the plastic bag immediately, just in case, because you know, if you're not used to murder, bludgeoning somebody especially is going to be one of the most inefficient ways to kill somebody. So you want to go with that plastic bag, just to, even if they're just having like enough brain activity just to twitch. You don't want that twitching. You want them completely dead.
Welcome to the Making a Murderer podcast. I'm Stu. He's Scott. We're going to tell you how to get away with it today.
Well, I mean, this isn't how you get away. This is
numbers.
Well, this is novice murder attempting. I've never attempted a murder.
Yeah, no, she definitely, like, this whole plan is just in shambles.
Yeah.
She drags him out of the house while she's just calling him fat the whole time.
Yeah, like, she's bitching about how he should have gone to the gym and done some sit-ups and all this shit.
Like, I always told you to lose a few pounds. Like, yeah. Like, wow, lady, way to fucking rub it in.
Yeah, you murdered him. So, like, you don't get to, like, talk down to him as a human being.
While she's doing this, you hear a radio broadcast, like a little news spot. They've been playing Christmas carols this whole time.
Yeah.
Almost like in a K-Billy super sound of the 70s kind of way.
Yeah, and they really go the other direction with this news announcement.
It's like, hey, there's a crazy dude who's killed people. He's escaped from mental hospital. Witnesses say that he's wearing a Santa Claus suit that he stole from somebody's house.
They also say that he only kills women, or he's only killed women so far.
Oh, I didn't hear that bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is odd, because he just seems, when he shows up, he just seems like a maniac, like there's no discretion.
I'm wondering where he got that Santa suit from then.
Yeah, because you've got to kill a guy dressed as Santa.
Yeah.
Because nobody keeps a Santa Claus. Like, if you have a Santa Claus costume in your house and it's Christmas, you're going to be dressed as Santa. Unless it could be one of those cases where it's like, you know, the Mental Institute's Christmas pageant and like he just made off with one and snuck out.
No, like it specifically says he stole it from one of his victims' homes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, so maybe he killed Mrs. Claus while Santa was out tonight and got one of his spirit costumes.
Come on, Joseph. We'll continue our music for Christmas Eve after KEC News on the Hour. And now here's Tracy Donahue with the headlines.
Police and sheriff's departments in the Gaines County area have issued an all-points bulletin this evening for a male Caucasian reported to have brutally murdered four women in the Pleasantville area. County authorities say that the man, a patient at the Pleasantville Institute for the Criminally Insane, escaped earlier this evening and should be considered extremely dangerous. Officials confirm that the suspect is a heavyset man in his late 40s and is reported to be wearing a Santa Claus suit stolen from the home of one of his victims. All citizens in the Pleasantville Gaines area are advised to remain in their homes until further notice throughout this emergency alert situation.
Funny. So her plan is to drop the body into a well, which is 10 feet in front of her fucking door. It's on her property.
Yeah.
Like,
which, yeah, the cops are going to find this in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Like there's, it's just such a fucking shoddy murder. And assuming the fucking Keystone cops show up and Barney Fife is just sitting there scratching his head for half an hour before he fucking calls it case closed. In the summer, somebody's going to come by and take a drink of water from that well.
You think so? Because it seems like they're pretty well off, so they've got to have like decent... I thought the well was just there for aesthetics, but they do, I think, also have a bucket hanging down in it.
Yeah, there's definitely a bucket there. Like, I just feel, and I mean, like, because if I see a well, I'm going to be like, nice well water. I might try and drink some of that. But, like, I just, because especially, you got a kid that's living there. The kid's like, oh, hey, a well, like, gets a cup of water in the summer or something like that. Suddenly she has the fucking thinner disease or something.
I think you also, have to board that well up if you've got a kid running around.
Yeah, it's hey mom, watch this. Curse, yeah. Splash.
Yeah, that's what kids do. They get trapped in wells.
Yeah, you'd think that from her Goonies mom experience, she would have a little bit of insight into how this whole thing works.
Well, if she's like the Goonies mom, then maybe she thinks there's like a whole network of caverns down there, and the body's just gonna wash like all the way through to One-Eyed Willy's, the fucking octopus that they cut out of the movie's gonna eat it.
God, what a dumb thing to cut. That should have stayed.
Yeah, why did they cut that out? They just thought it was too much? Like,
it might have been that. I mean, just we've sloth. Already got a skeleton organ.
Yeah, just sloth punch it to death or something.
Break!
It ties its tentacles in knot.
it treats it. Meanwhile, the Popeye the Sailor theme is playing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I was going to say instead of eating spinach, he eats his own shit, but I thought that'd be a little uncalled for.
Ruth?
Yeah.
Ruth?
And I love Sloth. He's a very progressive character.
Is he? Turns out that this guy is not quite, he's just mostly dead. Not quite as dead as you would think. Yeah. Because he just shoots his arm out and grabs her by the throat and it's like, bitch, this ain't happening.
Yeah, he does one of those good vengeance, like,
comebacks. Oh, yeah.
Like, he's immediately going into killing her.
Yeah, it doesn't make any noise or anything, just staring at her the whole time, like,
yeah.
Crushing her windpipe. She, like, kicks him.
Mm-hmm.
She manages to, she's reaching for an axe all the time. She manages to kick him off, and then he kind of falls back, and then she's like, what the fuck was this? She gets the axe in her hand, and this is immediately when Santa just like, what's going on over here?
And also, who's cutting this wood with this axe if this guy's so out of shape? Because wood chopping, like, you'll lose a beer gut chopping some wood.
Yeah, it'll work you out pretty good. I just imagine the little girls out there, or they have, like, a yard guy doing it.
Yeah, I mean, they probably have servants of some kind.
Servants. Santa shows up just kind of standing there menacingly, and then he just starts running at her, and she fucking runs in the house and slams the door on his hand.
Yeah, well, she hits his hand with the axe first.
Yeah, well, so she like gets in, she tries to lock it. He's got his hand in the door, mm-hmm. and she's got her back to it, holding him back. And then she remembers, oh yeah, I'm holding an axe. And then the person that sharpened this thing was ready to kill somebody.
Yeah,
because it immediately just like slices right into this guy's hand.
Yeah, and the whole time he's just making these Muppet sounds, like when Yoda's digging through R2 for food.
Yes.
And, yeah, and cackling and all that shit. And we were talking about this off the air, like, Larry Drake is, he's a decent enough actor that you need to give him more to do, because pretty much anybody could have played this character. Like, you want to get a, you could get somebody naturally ugly, because Santa's whole selling point in this is he looks terrifying. Like, he looks like a goddamn lunatic. There's nothing subtle about it. He's got bubba teeth. He's got, like, soot and dirt, like he's a street urchin all on his face. Yeah. And you don't really need somebody to act. Like, you need a stuntman who looks like he's already been hit in the face with a machete.
Yeah, give me like a Kane Hodder in this. You don't need somebody that's good at acting. You need somebody that's good at just being there.
Well, the thing with Kane Hodder is you can't buy this woman holding a door to keep Kane Hodder back, because he's like a good 6'5". Like, that door's just going to be pulp when he comes through it. But there is a similar Jason jump scare, like from, I think it's Nightmare, Friday the 13th Part 2, the reaching through the window and grabbing her, because Santa does that. And
yes. Oh,
when she's outside, she also gets away with him by grabbing an icicle.
Oh, yeah. He pins her. I forgot about this. Like, he pins her up against the well.
Yeah. And she grabs an icicle off of it and, like, digs it into his face and kind of carves a line up it. But
yeah.
If she'd gone for an eye, she probably could have taken him out. But she,
oh, yeah.
For whatever reason, doesn't poke. She slashes with it.
This is going to come back again. She's very bad at this.
Yeah, she never should have committed this murder, and now she's, like, brought on this karmic retribution.
That she is not at all, she doesn't have the stomach for it.
Yeah, and which, you know, who among us is going to be equipped to deal with a maniac on Christmas Eve of all nights?
Fair enough. She gets inside, she's like, did she pick up the phone at this point?
She doesn't pick up the phone yet, because she's trying to figure out what to do. Because at this point, I was already thinking pin the murder on the crazy guy.
Right. She has not come to this conclusion yet.
Yeah, so the police police call her and announce that they're, like, going from house to house, making sure nothing's up. Which, even if you have committed a murder that you're trying to get away with, this guy is actively trying to kill you, so you don't tell the cops to stay away.
She's not doing a very good job being subtle about it either. She's like, they're like, hey, we're going to have a deputy come by your house in 20 minutes. Just check on everything, you know, just check the area, see if there's anything going on. And she's like, coming here? There's police coming here?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, and you've already got a smashed window, so you can say he came in through that, killed the husband. That, like, there's plausible deniability here with the husband murder. And at the very least, this horrible, scary maniac is not going to torture you to death.
The best part about the coming through the window bit is he doesn't, like, just come through the window. It's a tire swing that comes through and breaks it.
Yeah, and then he just bursts through.
And he then bursts through after it. But, like, one, that's got to be, like, the world's toughest tire swing. Like, I can only imagine there's some water in it and it's just frozen on the bottom to get the weight to do it. Two.
Yeah, you want a big tractor tire if you're really trying to take out a window.
Two, who builds a tire swing that swings into the window at the arc of its swing?
Yeah, that's not a great move, too, because you're just going to have a bloody kid on your hands and bunkers to deal with that.
Yeah.
Well, do we actually see it still on the cord?
Yes.
Okay, so it swings, like, back out.
He swings it through and it swings back out. And then the whole time I'm just sitting there, I'm like, why did we build this so close to the house? Like, this is such a fucking dumb idea.
And then she gets rid of him here by, she grabs the axe, but she clocks him with the blunt end of it. So he goes stumbling back.
He uses the less pointy end of an already clearly sharp axe.
Yeah. Like, which this guy, you don't know how superhuman he might be, because maybe this isn't the PC thing to say, but I assume anyone with any crazy person has, like, a little bit of superhuman strength. So I would try to take that into account with this. So, you know, you do all the damage that you can, because he's going to have that maniac healing factor. Or at the very least, he's going to be able to tune out pain and keep coming.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's kind of, not to dehumanize the mentally ill, but a lot like a bug from Starship Troopers. Like, he's still 60% combat effective.
Yes. He like, stumbles back and he falls down into the snow. And then, instead of just finishing the job, she, like, just closes these flimsy wooden shutters that she has.
Yeah, which I would argue coming through the glass is going to be harder than getting through those wooden shutters.
Yeah.
Because, like, going through even if you break the window, you've still got to make it through broken glass, which is always going to be difficult versus, like, mm-hmm. wood. Like, you're not going to get cut up going through wood after you smash it.
Yeah, no, you might get a little bit, like, scraped, but you're going to get those shutters aren't that great. You're going to get that right out of the way.
Yeah.
Hello?
Mrs. Kamen?
Yes?
Mrs. Kamen, this is Sergeant Feldstein at the Pleasantville Police Station. We're calling everyone in your immediate vicinity about the individual who escaped from the mental hospital tonight.
Huh?
Have you heard anything about it on the news or...
No!
Well, ma'am, he's killed a couple of people. We have reports he's wearing an old Santa Claus suit, and we're sending deputies to all the homes in your area just to check up.
You're sending the police here?
Yes, ma'am.
Here?
That's right, ma'am. There should be a man in your area in about 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, is there anything else I should know about this individual?
Well, not really, ma'am. He's apparently used an axe to kill his victims. I don't mean to alarm you, but, well, for your protection, we do suggest you lock your home and remain indoors until the deputy arrives.
Yes. Oh, I will. Thank you. No, officer. I didn't kill him. Santa did it. Didn't you, Santa? Didn't you?
Especially if we've seen what this guy's capable of at this point.
But this is also the point where she sees the husband's body, which is why she doesn't want to call the cops, but then the wheels start turning, and she realizes, oh, she can just pin this on the crazy guy. So she takes the axe back outside and starts axing the husband.
Yeah, well, she attempts, like, she's fucking swinging a miss, because she's... I don't know why. She's like, okay, well, I could kill him. I guess that was one of those, like, heat of the moment, got to do it now kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But she can't bring herself to look as she's swinging this axe, so hits either side of his head.
Yeah, and what you want to do, and, you know, she's in a heated situation now. What you want to do is you want to bury that axe head in the same spot you hit him with the fire poker earlier. Am I making too much sense here? Like, you're trying to cover your tracks a little bit?
Yeah, no, she's definitely.
Which, if you're like a novice axe swinger, though, that's kind of good because it gives you a little slot to, like, line your swing up.
Or, you know, fuck it, go for broke, mutilate the corpse.
Yeah, I think that would be the thing to do. And then you can still, like, well, you don't even have to bother with the well at this point because you've already got your alibi. You take this guy out, and then you go worry. Well, obviously, she should have gone for the crazy guy first, but we'll touch on that.
Yeah, the body is not quite the threat that you need to be worrying about at this point.
And she also holds the door open with this, like, little umbrella holder. I guess that's what it's called.
It's like a little, like, there's like a walking stick and a couple of umbrellas in it for whatever reason.
Yeah, it looks like a tall, like, fancy trash can.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where the wealthy store their umbrellas and their walking canes.
Hand me down my walking cane. Yeah. Hand me down my hat.
It's when you just have a fashion cane, like one of those Lucius Malfoy, like, I keep my wand in here and it's got a snake's head on the end, in case you don't know that.
Oh, maybe. Maybe her husband was trying to emulate Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah, that would make sense, because that's a very Scrooge thing. You think since Voldemort can, like, he could speak Parseltongue, like, just to fuck with him, Lucius isn't going to fuck with Voldemort, but, like, anybody who did want to fuck with Voldemort, you could get Lucius's cane that has the snake head on it and be like, hey, Voldemort, how's it going? Like, I bet that would... I mean, he'd probably Avada...
Going on another wall today?
He'd Avada Kedavra you on the spot, but, you know, it'd be for a pretty good gag. That's like
you'd go down as a fucking legend.
Yeah, like one of Malfoy's goons friends, like Crab or Goyle's dad, would probably do that. And it's like, yeah, well, Crab's an orphan now because his dad kept fucking with Voldemort. Like, they just find a human joke shop that's just got like a whoopee cushion. They've never seen technology like that in the wizarding world.
One of those fake mustard and ketchup dispensers that just shoots a string at you and you jump and like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, dude, some peanut brittle with some fucking springy snakes, which nobody's ever torn into a can of peanut brittle. That's a Paul F. Tompkins bit. I'll leave that to him.
She finally realizes that she can get away with this. She calls the police. She calls the operator at this point. Mm. She's like, yeah, I knocked the guy out. He's in my backyard. She turns around and she realizes that he's awake. And
they also should have had 911 at this point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, she's, for some reason, she's not choosing to call 911. She keeps calling the operator.
Mm-hmm.
The operator's like, do you have anything in the house that you can defend yourself with? And she's like, oh, my God, I have a gun.
Yeah, finally.
Didn't think about this at all. She runs upstairs, she steps into the closet.
Yeah, she's not upstairs because he puts a ladder up against the house because there's a window here, and she can see him climbing the ladder, and I guess the closet is right below her daughter's room, so that's what he's going for.
Yeah.
And she, again, they go back to the she accidentally got locked. Like, she initially gets accidentally locked out of the house because she brings the keys out, but then the door gets blown shut and has to fumble for the keys. And then she goes into the closet and gets locked in there, too, which is kind of, you could argue, lazy writing.
It's just this, it's one woman having the worst night of her life.
Yeah, like, she's having a lot of bad luck and some butterfingers here.
Yeah. And then so the door closes behind her. She can't reach the gun because apparently her fucking husband is like Shaquille O'Neal and has built the world's tallest shelf.
Yeah.
She turns around because, like, she can see him climbing up.
Shaq retired from, like, Death Wish crime fighting. So he's like, I need you guys to keep my gun on the shelf that only I can reach. Which I guess that would make sense. Shaq would need it on an even taller shelf that, like, only...
If I ever need this again.
Yeah. He gives it to his friend Manute Bol. He's like, put this where I can't reach it. All right, Shaq, your secret's safe with me.
Better movie. She turns around to get herself out, and then the doorknob comes off in her hand.
Yeah.
And so she tries to put it back in and ends up pushing the doorknob out of the other end of the door.
Which, doesn't this just render the door, like, kind of moot? Like, you just can easily push your way through the door? You're not stuck in a place if this happens, I thought.
I don't know. Like, maybe if she's... If there's, like, a latch that's closed on it, like, if the bolt got pushed out while she did it and it was already resting in there. I don't know, man. This is weird.
This can only happen to like a 150-year-old door.
Yeah. And so then she like just starts beating the shit out of it until it finally opens up, and she runs upstairs just in time to see that her daughter isn't there.
Mm. Yeah, well, the daughter also... So there's this scene where when she's trapped in the closet, you see Santa climbing the ladder slowly.
Oh, yeah.
To get to the daughter's room, and the daughter opens the window up, and she's reaching out. And as a kid, I always knew that, like, seeing Santa meant no presents, so I didn't even try to risk that on Christmas Eve. Mm. Or at least that was the rule as I understood it.
That's kind of what I was told too.
And it's, you know, it's just what your parents tell you, so you can go to fucking bed and they can drink and put your presents out.
And then the whole time, like, she's just yelling at Santa, like, yeah, come here, Santa, bring me stuff. Like,
yeah.
No concept of the danger that she's currently in.
She tells him don't slip, because at one point he's on the top rung of this ladder. Like, that's how bad he needs to murder. Like, he'll throw ladder safety just out the window. And
I'm just picturing, like, this murder mini episode being turned into Christmas Vacation as the ladder just slips and he falls face first into the bushes or something.
Yeah, Clark Griswold goes up with an axe and lands on it, but it's just in his ass and everybody has a good laugh.
Hey, Clark, you got an axe in your ass.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to start calling you Axehole.
Or it gets stuck in his head, and then all of a sudden he really likes Cousin Eddie. He's got like part of an axe in his head for the rest of the movie.
you know what, Eddie? I think you've been wrong. I think I've been wrong about you this whole time. Maybe the government is out to get you. Maybe we should give you $10,000 for your legal fees.
Yeah, and his eyes are going in different directions. Because that's always how you can tell somebody's, like, sustained a massive head injury in a comedy.
You could just go cross-eyed and drool a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah, the daughter, she's just, like, saying, like, come on, you big Santa. Like, that's, yeah, Santa's big. Also, she's old enough to have a concrete idea of what Santa is supposed to look like, the white beard and all this shit. Like, nobody, and you could argue this is a more realistic Santa with, like, the stress of the holiday season and just turning a man into a monster.
The dude's super disheveled. He looks like Dan Aykroyd from Trading Places, like when he's at his lowest.
Yeah, but with Bubba teeth and like scars and soot. Like, this guy's life has become just, well, I guess this guy's life is a nightmare by choice, or, you know, well, maybe not by choice, depending on how you look at
the dude. Just looks fucked. Yeah. The dude looks fucked up.
And he's already a frightening guy, this kid. But the kid wants those toys, which I kind of get, because I was a really spoiled kid, so you'll take your chances with crazy-looking Santa. And she does.
I'll sit on this guy's lap if you give me an N64. I don't care.
Yeah, and she does specifically mention, like, where are my toys? So, you know, this kid's not trying to, like, kiss Santa's ass for no reason. She has an end game in mind.
Mom runs upstairs. The daughter isn't there. So then she's coming back down the stairs, and then the little girl steps around the corner holding Santa's hand. So Santa's got the daughter in one hand and an axe in the other hand, and the daughter still can't quite see it.
Yeah, he has no reindeer. There haven't been any sleigh bells or any, which if you want to know if a Santa's legit, you got to keep an eye out for some reindeer. Like, not even necessarily nine of them, but you need to, at the very least, see one and a sack of toys.
There's that. Even as a little kid, though, like, I could read a room to an extent. Like, I could see, like, oh, mom looks really upset about something. I wonder what's happening. And, yeah. You know, I feel like I could understand, like, oh, stranger in the house holding an axe. Mom looks scared. Maybe this isn't the Santa I know and love.
Just having an axe inside of a house is a red flag. Because there aren't a lot of reasons to bring an axe into a house. Like, maybe you're chopping down a door because the house is on fire.
If you're a firefighter. I think a firefighter or a career woodsman is the only... And even then, a woodsman, I expect to have a shed.
Or if you retired from firefighting and you were given a golden axe.
Yeah.
But otherwise, yeah, there's no reason to bring an axe into your home.
This is totally fair.
I mean, maybe if you're like a Native American brave and, you know, that's how you make your bread and butters... I mean, a tomahawk's kind of an axe.
I was going to say, even then, you'd be a tomahawk, and that's not quite a wood chopping axe.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, there's no reason for Santa to look like a goddamn mess, and there's no reason for Santa to have that fucking axe.
Correct. Mom screams. It kind of does a close-up on her, and then it fades to black, and that's the end of the episode.
Yeah, Larry Drake has his only line, which is naughty or nice.
Yes.
And then, you know, he's about to get to axing.
Then it just fades back in, and it's the Crypt Keeper has taken off his Santa face, so it's just kind of laying there all gooey.
It's much more palatable, though, just regular Crypt
Keeper. Oh, yeah, absolutely. This is way less creepy than it is with him wearing it.
Yeah.
Like, it was just the puppetry and the animatronics at the time were just so bad that it was just like, ugh, it's just, ugh, not good.
Yeah, and he also lets us know that Santa only killed the mom. He didn't kill the kid.
He says that it's like, and if you're worried about little Cindy, don't be. Santa only likes older women. Like, yeah. Oh, what the fuck is wrong with this guy?
So instead of the girl getting murdered, the Crypt Keeper lets us know that Santa just killed the mom in front of the girl.
Yeah.
Which is going to, maybe she's too old for a Dexter situation, but it's still going to do some lasting damage.
Yeah, the holidays are forever going to be the worst time in this girl's life.
She's probably like 20 years later going to become a Santa-themed killer.
Kind of like she's going to pull a sweet tooth from Twisted Metal.
Yeah. What was that, his backstory? That, like,
no. So it was in Twisted Metal
at one point.
Yeah, in the 2009 Twisted Metal, like, you find out the sweet tooth through Sweet Tooth's story. You find out that he was killing his family. Mm-hmm. And his daughter got away, so he was trying to find the daughter to kill her.
Oh, okay, that's way too much backstory for Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, she ends up becoming Mrs. Sweet Tooth, basically. Like, she kills him, but then she sort of becomes the next incarnation of him.
Yeah. Yeah, less backstory with a killer clown's definitely the way to go.
Absolutely.
Like, the Joker, no backstory, great. The Insane Clown Posse, like, we know everything about them, and they're the Insane Clown Posse.
homies, yeah. Talking about...
they come up too much on this fucking network. Like, I feel like, for whatever reason, the Insane Clown Posse are one of three, like, go-to topics for me, just to, like, show I'm kind of worldly. It's like, oh, do you know about these guys from Michigan? They fucking wear clown face paint, they spray Faygo at people.
And then
a handful of people are like, oh no, I haven't heard of that. That sounds really stupid. It's like, yeah, let me explain more of it. And then other people are just like, yeah, I have heard about that. I don't care.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's hard to beat a juggalo.
No, it's actually pretty easy to beat a juggalo.
Well, I'm not going to the gathering. I mean, just.
That's what we should. So right now, dear listeners, we are attempting to, and this is a good time to let people know that March 9th and 10th, we will be at the Huntsville Comic and Pop Culture Expo in Huntsville, Alabama. We're trying to get some live shows and some live appearances going at some of the conventions. I think we should go to the gathering and talk to the juggalos. I think we could get, for fucking 3 gallons of Faygo and $10 in gas money, we could get a vendor spot and talk to people about some killer clowns.
I think it's going to be more than $10 gas money, though, because, like, how far from civilization the gathering has to be.
Oh, no, I mean, that would be the price that they would charge us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we could just give, here's a tank of gas and here's 3 gallons of Faygo. Can we set up a broken board on some cinder blocks and make this a vendor booth for our, for our podcast, please.
And here's a bucket of grease paint. Knock yourselves out. Careful, there's lead in that.
Oh, God. Yeah, that is all through the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode is one of the most distinct ones of Tales from the Crypt I remember. Like, this is one of, if I was thinking of Tales from the Crypt episodes, it always goes back to, oh yeah, fucking killer Santa. And
yeah, it's pretty, it's iconic.
Yeah, and it's just not, like, the ending is great, but there's a lot of, like, silly filler. Like, it's not terrible. I'd probably give it, like, a solid 4, because it's directed well. It's performed pretty well. There's just not that much to this. There's the murder at the beginning, and then from there, it's all just killer Santa, and there's not much in the way of curveballs.
Yeah, no, it is what you see is what you get. Like, that was when I first started, when we first got on, I mentioned, like, you know, this was very, this isn't what I remembered it being, just because it, from the last episode, you know, you have a lot of him talking to the camera, a lot of dialogue going on, a lot of discussion happening in the episode, whereas this is a woman screaming and running through a house for 20 minutes.
Yeah, and she's really the only one that has a lot to do. Mary Ellen Trainer, who plays the mom, because Larry Drake, he doesn't really have anything to do. He has one line, so he's too good of an actor for Crazy Santa.
Yes.
And then Marshall Bell has, like, one funny line as dickhead husband, but that's all he gets, so he could have had more to do, too. I don't really, like, she gets locked out of the house twice, or locked, in a situation twice, so it feels like there's just a little bit of filler here that I think they could have tightened up. It's pretty well directed, though, and it is entertaining. Like, it's not a bad episode.
No, I enjoyed it the whole time. It's just one of those things where it's such a switch going from the House of Cards electricity killer to Crazy Santa with an axe running around.
Yeah, and especially the fact that they aired this episode during the summer, but I guess nowadays TV seems like it's so much more obsessive about particular seasons and event programming and that kind of stuff, that I do like the idea of just, here's a random episode set during Christmas for July, like, just to kind of take your mind off the heat.
Absolutely.
That's what Tales from the Crypt is doing, you know, during that summer Alabama heat, cooling folks off with a killer Santa tail.
Hey there, kiddies. I'm sure you're burning up out there, so here's a little something to keep you cool.
Yeah, and, I mean, a crypt's probably going to be cool, too. Like, there's rock everywhere. It's underground.
Yeah, his does look pretty dank.
Yeah, and there's always, I guess the viewer is the one always going all the way down to the crypt to get their story for the week. Long take.
I enjoy an opening like that. Same reason I like Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, this the Tales from the Crypt opening with the camera just going into the old house and down the winding stairwell and then into the crypt and the crypt keeper comes out of the coffin. Like, maybe top three best TV intros ever.
Oh, yeah.
It's everything this show is.
It harkens back to that whole, like, fuck, what was that? It's like, not Mission Impossible. The one where it's, like, going through all the different doors and gates and, like, the things are unlocking. Is it maybe, like, Dragnet or something?
I'm not sure. I only ever watched the Dragnet movie, which is underrated.
That was Dan Aykroyd and Tom Hanks, right?
Yeah. And it was, like, Tom Hanks before he was, like, the best actor ever. I mean, maybe not the best actor ever, but before he really cemented himself as, like, an Oscar guy and he was still kind of doing silly comedy.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's better, especially considering it's one of the, like, early TV adaptation movies. It's pretty consistently entertaining. Christopher Plummer, he's the villain in it. The evil society is called Pagan, and it's like people against goodness and normalcy. It's pretty good. What, like, do you give it a rewatch? It's great.
I can do that. What do you rate this episode, Scott?
I'll give this one a solid 4.
Solid 4?
Yeah.
I am gonna give it. Yeah, I'll give it 4 kisses under the mistletoe.
Yeah, it's it is good. It's consistently entertaining. But yeah, you did have 2 actors who could have brought a little more to it if they were given more to do.
Yeah, no, it's a writing thing. Yeah. Not a actor thing.
Yeah, and all things considered, like, it is writing for TV, but, you know, you expect better from the guy who wrote Monster Squad and Checks Notes, RoboCop 3. Okay. Yeah. This is head and shoulders better than RoboCop 3.
You know who would have been a really good killer Santa? Also would have been underutilized in this, but I think Steven Root would have been perfect in that. Like,
he would have fucking brought it.
Yeah, and because he'd already worked with him for RoboCop 3, so he could have brought him in. But, like, yeah, I think Steven Root would have been a really good killer Santa in this one.
Yeah, and you mentioned Thinner earlier, and in RoboCop, that's when they recast RoboCop 3. That's when they recast RoboCop. What's his name? Peter Weller.
Weller.
Yeah, they cast the guy from Thinner to become RoboCop.
Yeah. Much better prosthesis in that.
Yeah, it's really stupid. He flies at the end. There is a pretty cool moment at the end where RoboCop is going to fly away on his jetpack, but first he uses the flames on it to just cook the bad guy's legs. So he's in a high-rise tower, so he still can't run from the explosion anyway, but now he's just on, like, the 50th floor trying to crawl, and then there's the explosion. That movie fucking sucks.
You're not wrong.
You know, that was the first RoboCop movie I ever saw, too.
Oh, man, what a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah, well, I saw it when I was, fucking 11, because it was PG-13, so nobody gave a shit about letting you watch RoboCop 3, and it's a terrible movie anyway, so it's like, here, knock yourself out, stupid.
Is that the one where it's, I am authorized to be as loyal as a puppy?
Yeah, like a little hacker child hacks Ed 209 in the opening scene. Like, the great Ed 209 who can't navigate stairs, but blows away a fucking executive because his programming fucks up. Yeah, it was... Oh, man.
Well, how was that for a scream, poison ghouls? Oh, don't worry about little Carrie. This particular Santa preferred older women. In pieces, that is. Well, it just goes to show ya. Be very careful what you ask for Christmas. You might just get it.
Oh, but yeah, guys, if you've enjoyed this, check out some of our other programs. We have Soda Podinsky with our good buddy here, Scott and Brian. They drink sodas and they talk about things.
Yeah, we're doing Manzanita Soul next, which, yeah, it's an apple soda.
Sounds delicious. If you're more into video games, we've got Game Draw, which is our bi-weekly video game podcast, where we've got Resident Evil 2 coming up in honor of the soon-to-be-released Resident Evil 2 remake. Man, I'm not looking forward to talking about that. I am, but at the same time, ugh. We also have the original Rebrew episodes that we're re-putting up. This is the show that started it all, myself and Tank and special guests talking just about things while we drink.
Yeah, and also don't follow official BoJack Horseman on Instagram, because then a bunch of fake BoJack accounts will start following you. That's no good.
I love it. If you're a sports fan, go listen to the SEC Jerks. I myself am sports illiterate, but people have been saying good things about that. Yeah, just check us out.
Don't talk about wrestling for some reason.
Yeah, just go check us out. We're on Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, anywhere good podcasts are listed.
And bad podcasts, like whatever and your beliefs
even
are.
Even bad, yeah.
Yeah, you can find yourself a podcast.
But hey, guys, thanks so much for listening. I've been Stu.
And I'm Scott.
And this has been Tales from the Scary Thing. Stay spooky.
Yeah, tonight's goodbye, boys and ghouls, I guess. What? I don't know. Time to get back in the coffin. I'd like to see Crypt Keeper, like, he's just had, like, a rough show, like a 12-hour day of recording, and him just getting into the coffin and, like, sleepily trying to shut the lid. It'd probably be kind of sad.
Yeah.
But then also, like, you don't want Crypt Keeper coming out of the coffin lethargically either. Like, he's got to burst out cackling.